Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
We have got a lot to dive into. We got a loaded show, lots of guests, but I would say probably the most interesting story that is out there right now is many of the protocols that now exist for the NBA as they have released, and you just heard from there in the update, you just heard all of the different wacky details that surround the NBA's return from Brian Finley there. I grabbed several of these details. It's 113 pages, this situation. And there were so many details that were flashing last night and into this early morning as the details have come out. And so here are several different things that I think stand out. And then I'm going to bring in the crew and see what they think. By the way, Shannon Spake scheduled to join us in hour one. Then in hour two, I believe we are talking to Jeff Schwartz. And then in hour three, we will talk with John Morosi for the latest on Major League Baseball. And yes, I'm still fired up about the stupidity of baseball. And we'll see what John Morosi thinks of the absolute latest news. I believe that is correct, right, Danny G? Did I get all the details there correct? All right. So here are some of the amenities that the NBA players will have in their Orlando bubble. They will have lots of different places where they can play video games. They will have barbers, manicurists, and pedicurists on site. They will have a 24-hour VIP concierge, daily entertainment, movie screenings, some of which have not yet aired in movie theaters, DJs, video games, ping pong, pool, lawn games. Players can attend other games, so they can go watch other teams play. They are being, if you're familiar at all with Walt Disney World, they are being put in a variety of different hotels based on seating, and the players that are theoretically going to be staying longer are in the same hotel. So I'm not an expert on all these places. I've been to one of the three hotels. Grand Destino on Disney World's campus will have the Bucks, Lakers, Raptors, Clippers, Celtics, Nuggets, Jazz, and Heat. That is the eight best-seeded teams. Then the Grand Floridian will have the Thunder, the 76ers, the Rockets, the Pacers, the Mavericks, the Nets, the Grizzlies, and the Magic. The Yacht Club will have the Blazers, Kings, Pelicans, Spurs, Suns, and Wizards. Remember, six of these teams will be eliminated in the first 2 weeks. So then we'll be down to 16. And then after the first round of the playoffs, you'll be down to eight teams. So pretty rapidly, two-thirds of the teams that are in Orlando will be able to leave and go back to normalcy. Now, this 113-page health and safety protocols also says, I mean, it's incredibly detailed. No doubles in ping pong. Quote, until directed otherwise by the NBA, players should play singles only so that they can maintain 6 feet of distance from each other. Also, probably another wacky element is that the NBA, well, there's so many different angles here. The NBA also has protocols even for card games. And it says that they require anyone playing cards indoors to wear masks. Players, staff must dispose of the deck at the end of each game and session. Sufficient packs of cards will be available. So it's pretty funny, actually, to think about there being like this huge depot for cards. So anybody who's playing any type of game, there's just a huge stack, I guess, of constantly rotating new cards. The most important detail is that, again, somebody testing positive doesn't require everybody else to quarantine. This is a pretty significant detail. The occurrence here is from Woj. The occurrence of a small or otherwise expected number of COVID-19 cases will not require a decision to suspend or cancel the resumption of the 2019-2020 season. So that is pretty significant in the grand scheme of things as you kind of break down the direction in which things are going. Players and team staff are not allowed to leave absent extenuating circumstances to leave the Orlando bubbles. And what's an extenuating circumstance? A medical care off the campus, birth of a child, severe illness, death in family, or a family wedding, and only with prior league approval. Anyone who leaves will have to quarantine for up to 2 weeks on their return. And anyone, this is ridiculous and interesting too, it makes me think we need a reality television show surrounding all of the NBA bubble. Anyone who tests positive for coronavirus must immediately enter, quote, isolation housing, which will be a house, hotel, or other facility separate from the rest of the NBA campus. They will remain in said isolation housing until they are asymptomatic or cleared. The NBA will also create an anonymous hotline to report potential violations of protocols in Orlando. All of those details that I just ran through are a little bit silly, but also speak to how incredibly detailed the NBA has been in coming up with their Orlando bubble idea. Again, the positive that I would focus on here is it's not a positive in the sense that your team loses, but rapidly, relatively few NBA teams will actually be present in this venue. Six of them will be eliminated before the playoffs start. So remember, we're starting with 22 teams. Then we'll get down to 16. And then we will be working towards rapidly after the first round of the playoffs, we'll be down to 8 teams, which means, you know, 16 of the 22 teams, if I'm doing my math right, or 14 of the 22 teams, I'm sorry, will be gone pretty quick within basically a month or less. Most of these teams will be gone. Now, here is what is a little bit ridiculous from my perspective. Is if you look at the coronavirus numbers, they are continuing to decline precipitously. In particular, they are declining in a big way when you look at the number of people that are dying of the coronavirus. So why is that significant? Well, obviously, we're all hoping that the number of deaths will decline, but you can kind of plot the death rate decline pretty significantly here. And the people who are getting sick are not getting as sick now. And that's because we're keeping this, knock on wood, out of nursing homes where around half of all the people that have died have actually been. So typically, when younger, healthier people get the coronavirus, their impact is relatively small and not very substantial. So while the cases are staying the same or just declining a bit in terms of the percentage of people that are positive and the overall test case numbers, the number of people that are being hospitalized is declining pretty substantially because the people that are getting sick are younger and healthier than you would have seen in the early days of the outbreak. Having said all of this, the crew has had a chance to diagnose and review the 113-page document here laying out a lot of the particulars for the NBA. Danny G, what's the – and so the reason why I bring up the current coronavirus cases is by the time NBA players get down to Orlando and start actually playing games at the end of July – I think there is a very good chance that the overall impact of the coronavirus is significantly below where it is right now in our country. And remember, on July 15th, NASCAR, and we'll talk about this a little bit with Shannon Spake, but on July 15th, NASCAR is going to have up to 30,000 people present at Bristol for a sporting event. That's 2 weeks before the NBA season actually starts. I think the NBA is proceeding here with a tremendous abundance of caution, which may not, frankly, be that necessary by the time we get to late July and into August with the trajectory of the outbreak that we see right now. So keep that in mind. But Danny G, what stands out to you about this 113-page manual that was released last night?
I guess how specific things are, like how you need to wear a mask if you're going to play War, Go Fish, and Gin Rummy.
Yeah.
And it's a good thing Michael Jordan is not playing these days, because how in the world would he be able to sit there in the hotel and play cards and smoke his cigar with a mask on? I asked you this months ago when you first came up with your Biodome plan before most of the country did, about the groupies. NBA groupies are famous. Nothing in here in the bylines about how many groupies you're allowed to have in the dome.
The answer is none.
No, it can't be none.
It has to be none.
No, it can't be.
There is 100% going to be a scandal about a player or players trying to sneak girls into the NBA bubble. I mean, that is a 100% reality, because those guys are going to be there for a little while. They're going to look, there's a difference between, because if you bring your side chick in, right? Or your girlfriend or whatever you say. There's a lot of guys that enjoy being around a girl for, I don't know, a couple of days. They don't want them there for 3.5 months.
You don't think there'll be like presidential treatment where maybe a top security staff will whisk the girl in and out in the middle of the night?
No, because it violates the principles of the bubble.
Test her, though. You could run all the tests on her before you bring her in and out.
Yeah, but I think the problem is you can test negative and still have the coronavirus. Because we're not experts yet on how many days are you contagious and what exactly is involved in contagion. So you could come in and have your girl tested for the coronavirus
and other things.
And she could test negative. Yeah, right. You might want other tests to run as well. Maybe need a whole battery of medical analysis. But you could test negative, is my understanding. I could be wrong about this, but I could be wrong, because I don't think they know medically 100% the answer to the question you just had. But I think you could test negative for the coronavirus and still potentially be contagious, because you're in the early days of having been exposed, but you haven't tested positive yet. I think this is one of the challenges of testing in general, is that, for instance, it's Wednesday. You could test negative today and test positive on Friday, which is why testing isn't really that helpful, by which I mean it doesn't tell you very many days that you're not going to be negative. Does that make sense? Like, if you, in theory, you could test negative on Wednesday and positive on Friday. And the question is, could you have been able to infect someone on Wednesday even when you are testing negative for the coronavirus? I think the answer is it's unlikely, but I haven't read data that proves 100% if you test negative that you can't then also still be possible of spreading it. Now, most people, this is why the straightforward answer for everybody out there is, if you feel poorly, stay home, because the time when you are the most infectious is obviously when you have a fever.
Isn't it the same, though, as some of the Disney staff that's not going to be required to stay inside NBA campus?
I think that's kind of defeats the entire purpose of the bubble.
Yep.
This is what we talked about with Chris Mannix, because if you're not requiring all of the staff to stay inside of the bubble, then why are you requiring the players? Now, I think the answer would probably be because in general, your interaction, like every interaction, is not a potential exposure. So in other words, if you go to the grocery store and somebody who works at the grocery store has had the coronavirus, it's not like everybody who went to the grocery store has to quarantine themselves, because the average person who works at the grocery store, you didn't come into contact with them long enough or significantly enough to be a part of the quarantine zone, so to speak. So, you know, if you're walking down the aisle and you go shopping at the grocery store and somebody who is there stocking the grocery store tests positive, you merely walking past the person in the grocery store has not had a significant enough exposure that you need to quarantine. So I think the answer would be inside of Disney World, almost everyone that you would come into contact with, one, will have a mask on, right? I would imagine they'll have everybody covered in masks and everything else. But two, you aren't exposed to them enough to have actually had an issue with the likelihood of getting the virus. So that would be the answer to that question, I think. Dub, are the protocols here just absolutely insane to you?
Well, I obviously read all 113 pages last
yes,
night.
Yes, I know. I appreciate you. I appreciate you being on the ball and reading all 113 pages.
Absolutely. I think my favorite rule is the no doubles in ping pong, which takes me back to the times, which seems like a few years ago, but in reality, it was a couple months ago in California with Gavin Newsom and the whole badminton versus tennis ordeal. So that really rung a bell with me. Other than that, my favorite is probably the anonymous hotline, basically the snitch line.
We need like we used to have the, and maybe we need to set this up again at some point, but for people who've been listening to the Outkick radio show for a while, our old producer, Jason Martin, set up a phone line where you could call and leave a message for me, which was open, and then he would go through and listen to them and play the best ones, or you could react to football games that were going on and everything else. I think we should reset that up. But
it used to be people that hated you, and what wound up happening was there were all these callers in love with you, call after call. And so I hate you, Clay Travis, turned into I'm kissing your butt, Clay Travis.
Well, that's what happened in general. People who listen long enough,
they end up loving me.
No, but I mean, that's the truth. The more time people spend with me, the more time they end up liking me. Lovable person. But so that phone line that existed was an anonymous, theoretically, phone line. It was pretty popular.
Yeah.
I would love to hear the NBA calls on that anonymous phone line.
The different pussy willows on there?
Yeah, I mean, to see what people are trying to turn in as a violation, I think it would be, again, I think the NBA bubble reality show would be must-watch television. And I say that as somebody who's been sitting around watching Fuller House with my 5-year-old and my 9-year-old who were obsessed. If you remember Full House, there's now a new 5-season string in the same house setting called Fuller House, which has many of the kids that were on Full House grown up. Not, by the way, the Olsen twins. They were too big to come back on to Fuller House. But the whole thing is pretty fantastic. So, Dub, this whole scenario is patently absurd.
Yeah, it seems a little ridiculous. And, you know, we keep coming back to the point of by the time the NBA players are playing games, the Disney parks are going to be open and there's going to be guests, thousands and thousands of them outside on the roller coasters and whatnot.
And at the hotels.
Exactly. And all the NBA players are going to be stuck in their hotels with their 3 meals a day and their masks and no double decks of cards. And they're just going to be sitting around asking themselves, what are we doing here, guys? Because it's just going to look utterly ridiculous, in my opinion, when late July rolls around and this actually goes in full swing.
I think what's likely is, this is my bet, I think what's likely is they end the Orlando experience when the NFL and college football come back and they have fans present. Because I think people are going to look around and be like, what in the world is the NBA doing that they are requiring their players to stay in a bubble while NFL and college football players are playing the games with fans present? And I think NBA players are going to be like, this is ridiculous, and they're going to eventually move the NBA playoffs back to the arenas in the respective cities without fans present. That's what I would expect to end up happening before all is said and done as a way to handle this. But who knows for sure how exactly this will shake out. I just think that the bubble experience is going to look ridiculous when football is back and we've got fans present. What about you? We've got Brian Finley sitting in for Eddie Garcia, who is out this week. Is this as crazy to you, Brian, as it is to everybody else?
Clay, what's fascinating is reading some of the hygiene discussion and what the players have to do when they're on the court. They cannot play with their mouthpiece and, you know, kind of pull it in and out like a nervous tick.
Steph Curry would have been in trouble there.
He would have. And then there's also the no spitting or clearing of the nose, or shall I say firing of the snot rockets on the court. So these are important things. Like you said, it's very detailed. Oh, and also, Clay, no licking of the hands. So it gets very detailed.
Yeah, this is wild. Roberto, how long do you think this lasts?
I don't know, man. I think it might last until end of the
do
finals.
Do you think
they will
finish the we'll talk about this maybe a little bit later in the program, but I have serious reservations or questions about whether this will continue.
And it's dumb. It sounds like they're going to be like in like prison, right? It sounds like prison. Getting food. People are going to make food for you, right? They
gotta, everything geez, is in-house.
Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds dumb and it sounds completely outdated.
They can bring chefs. Individual teams can bring their own chefs. So but it's going to be interesting. I'm actually intrigued to see how many players bring family members, and I mean something other than a girlfriend or a wife, because I want to know how mom is responding to the idea of being in a quarantine zone. The players, I think, will be at least busy enough with the games that they'll have something to focus on. But if you have a wife or kids, that is insane that they would theoretically be in the bubble for that long as well, because I can only speak for my wife. And if I told her, I've said this before, that, hey, we're going to a Fox Sports Radio and we have to go to a location to do the show for 3 months and stay inside of a hotel bubble, basically. But the good news is you can come along with the kids and stay at the hotel with me. She would be like, she would just roll her eyes and be like, there's no way I'm bringing our kids. And again, I have a 12.
Yeah, exactly. What if your kid asks you for something that you can't give them, you know?
Like, well, a 12, 9, a 5-year-old, like, in an era when everything else is opening up, like when you can go to amusement parks and zoos and all just regular parks and all these other different things to do with young kids, the last thing most parents would want is to have to move into a hotel and keep your kids there. So maybe people will come and visit for a little bit. You know, I'll stay with you the first 2 weeks or something like that, because otherwise you have to quarantine before you go in. Anyway, there's a lot to unpack about this. We'll continue throughout the show. But up next, Shannon Spake. NASCAR is planning for 30,000 fans present on July 15th. Plus, Shannon told me that she has a quiz ready for me. And we have done quizzes on this show before, and hate to brag or draw attention to myself, but I'm usually pretty outstanding at them.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
We are joined now by Shannon Spake at Shannon Spake on Twitter, NASCAR expert extraordinaire. 30,000 fans in Bristol, in my home state of Tennessee here. That's a pretty big deal on July 15th, Shannon.
Yes, and all the fans will have personal chefs, and they will be able to play games inside the – no, I'm just kidding.
What would you –
yeah. It's a,
oh, sorry. No, go ahead and tell us about that, and then I've got a question to follow up.
Yes, huge deal, right? So it's a big deal for a lot of reasons, Clay. First of all, like, this is the first time really since the NASCAR All-Star Race began, so it's only really the second time that they've ever had it at a separate location outside of the Charlotte area. Of course, most of the NASCAR drivers live here. We've always done the All-Star Race here in Charlotte at the 1.5-mile track in May. And for them to move it is a big deal. But really the reason is because, I mean, obviously, as you know, living in Tennessee, you guys are allowing fans in. And so 30,000 fans are going to be allowed in. That's only 20% of the capacity of Bristol Motor Speedway. So you do have to kind of keep that in mind. It's much, much larger than like your regular NFL stadium. But yeah, 30,000 fans will be able to see it in just next month.
All right. So we were just talking about the NBA quarantine bubble rules, which are funny. And like you probably are like me and would enjoy watching a reality show about this. But so a first question for you, because I was just talking about my wife's reaction. If your husband was being quarantined in a bubble, let's pretend that he was an NBA coach, and he said to you, hey, you can come stay with me for 3.5 months, meaning like it's the Lakers or like he's on a good team, right, that theoretically could win a championship, and you can bring the kids. We're staying in a hotel. You can't go to Disney World or anything else. Yeah. You have to stay in the bubble. Your reaction is what?
enjoy your summer. I'll see you in September.
No way you're bringing yourself and the kids and moving into a hotel.
No way. I mean, and, you know, we see it with NASCAR drivers as well, Clay. I mean, I think it's different times of your life, right? Like, so when the drivers first start dating, you know, their girlfriends, a lot of the girlfriends go to the racetrack every single week.
Oh, yeah.
They stay in the motorhome.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's what they do, right? They stay in a motorhome from, like, basically Friday till Sunday during the normal season. And those, I mean, it's in a motorhome lot in the middle of the track. And so when the guys first start dating the girls, a lot of times they're there all the time. And then when they have families and the kids are in school, a lot of the wives, I mean, they'll go to big races like Talladega this weekend just because of, you know, and obviously they can't go this weekend because of what's going on, but this is a race that they'll go to because of the danger of Talladega. They do like to be there. Obviously Daytona, the start of the season. And then like the big races, right? If you go to LA or if you go to Miami or if you go to Chicago, because those are places that they want to go. But if you can't get out and you can't go see the city and do things, yeah, I think that they'd be staying home.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt at all. Okay, so as things are getting more and more normal towards NASCAR, here's the question that I think is intriguing about the NBA bubble, maybe the most of all, which is the NBA bubble going to look ridiculous if there are fans present for NFL and college football games? In other words, are NBA players going to rebel against this idea if they're sitting around in an Orlando bubble and they're watching the NFL and college football season taking place and they're seeing fans in the crowds there, and the NFL and college football players are basically living at home while continuing to play their sport?
I mean, I think that's one of the reasons they have all the amenities that they're having, right? So that they don't start to feel like, you know what, I'm getting out of here. Like, I'm leaving. I'm not going to stay here. You can't make me stay here, because they have everything right there. But I think so. I think if you told me to stay in a place for 3 months while I'm watching the rest of the world kind of get back to normal, I think I'd have a hard time with that. I don't know. I think most people would, right? It's like, hey, people are outside my window right now. I'm seeing people live their lives, and I can't go anywhere. So, yeah, I think that that's one of the reasons that they've done all of these things for the players, right? Give them all of these things so they don't have to go anywhere. It's kind of like Apple, right? Like, you go work for Apple, they have everything on campus. You don't have to go anywhere. You can go take a nap in, like, one of the rooms that they have on a building, everything that you need. And so, yeah, I think that that's why they're doing it. But I would have a hard time kind of staying in one spot when I am starting to see the rest of the world. We're all doing that, right? They're still asking people to stay at home. And then you look down the street and you see people out having dinner or, you know, with their families and all that stuff. And you're like, okay, what's going on here? So, yeah, I think it'd be a problem.
How many awkward conversations do you think there are with NBA players and their girlfriends? Girlfriend is ready to take the next step in the relationship and go move into the NBA bubble with him. Guy is like, I don't think we're there yet. How many fights are going to ensue over whether or not she may not even want to go, but whether or not she gets the invite?
So there's going to be some interesting conversations, right? I mean, there has to be. There has to be. I want to go. You can't go. 3 months, long time. And then breakups, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, gosh, no. I mean, I can't even imagine how many people have, you know, we've talked about during this quarantine, like your relationships with your husband or your kids go one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's a lot of time to be sitting inside of a room and to not be able to go out, despite the fact that you can play whatever, ping pong, and get your hair done and get your nails done, which it's just crazy to me, all of those things, as we're all sitting here with our roots grown out and not being able to do things that we want to do, and to see all that stuff that they're getting. But hey, you know, don't hate the player, hate the game, right?
Speaking of which, how much groupie drama is there going to be of players trying to sneak girls into the bubble? Because I'm going to be honest with you. If I were, let's say, you know, 25, 26 years old, I'm an NBA, you know, player, right? So you're pretty famous. You do well for yourself. If you're single, I would 100 billion % be trying to scheme a way to sneak girls, you know, probably a group, because it'd probably be me and the other single guys that are trying to get girls snuck in. Is there any doubt that there will be a story that erupts about players trying to sneak girls into the bubble?
Yeah, see, I don't play. I think nowadays with the social media stuff is when that stuff happens, I don't know how much you can hide that stuff anymore, right? because you're constantly, there's constantly social media, there's constantly pictures. I'm sure that it does happen a lot, but I think we hear about it a lot too when it happens. So I think it'll just be on a greater stage.
Oh, I think that these guys, I know when I was 25 years old, you're going to be like James Bond. Like you're going to be
Red
and in Shawshank Redemption, you know, when they're trying to scheme ways to get out. Like there's not a lot of things to do in the bubble. Like, you're going to be probing for the weaknesses of the bubble. You're going to be meeting security guards, giving guys some, you know, hey, guy, I'll give you a couple $100, Disney security. I don't know who the Disney security guards are going to be, but I bet if somebody wants to give them a couple $100 and a couple of autographed basketballs, we're not talking about, you know, Secret Service agents here. I bet they're very bribable to look the other way.
Yeah, so that would be the person that would have to write a book, is the NBA security guards that are on security duty for the next couple months. That would be it. It's like, hey, meet me in the stairwell.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Joined now by Jeff Shorts. You can follow him on Twitter there. He a lot of times sits in as a guest host on this show. Jeff, when you were a single guy and you were in an NFL locker room, if your team had been quarantined, like the NBA teams are talking about quarantine, how much discussion would have focused on trying to sneak in girls?
Probably.
Like you guys, my theory is, I'll tell you this. I know you pretty well. You know me pretty well. If I were a single guy and I'm quarantined at Disney World, I would be studying the Orlando bubble like I was inside of a prison. Like trying to probe all the weaknesses, trying to meet the security guards, there's 100% chance I would be trying to sneak girls in for not just me, but for the team as well. Don't you think that will be a huge point of discussion with these guys with tons of time to fill, trying to figure out how to sneak people in?
Oh, for sure. Look, I mean, the closest I can relate to this is training camp, where we would go off campus.
Oh, yeah.
With the Panthers.
Because you're not supposed to have girls in training camp, right?
Right. No, but we would get like a day off. Like we would get, you know, Wednesday nights off, and my now wife, my girlfriend, would drive down from Charlotte, and we would just started dating, and we would find places to do it. Maybe a hospital parking lot, maybe not. I can't confirm or deny that. But we would.
You
find,
would wait. Hold on. You would have sex in a hospital parking lot?
We did one time. Yeah.
Well, hold on. Can you imagine if you had gotten arrested as a member of the Carolina Panthers for trying to find a way to sneak your girlfriend sex while you're at training camp?
But it was a night off at least.
No, I'm saying, but it's still technically illegal, I would imagine, to have sex in a hospital parking lot.
Probably. I mean, if you're in the car though, it's not illegal, I guess.
No, it is totally illegal to have sex inside of a car in a parking lot.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's a good defense. Oh, officer, I had no idea that it was illegal to have sex in public in a car.
it was my wife's 3 Series BMW. It was not a good
first check. Of all, I don't even know how you fit in the 3 Series BMW, period.
I had a double hamstring cramp. It was not a good experience. It was right after practice.
You almost got on IR.
I had to go on IR as a rookie on like 7th round draft pick because I needed it so badly. No, guys find a way to get it done. And that's the thing is, like, I just don't know. I saw stuff today about, you know, Ramona Shelburne reported that, you know, there's going to be, like, a hotline to call in if, like, someone's breaking the rules. There's going to be, you know, the NBA players are worried about uniform punishment for guys that break the quarantine or don't follow the rules. I mean, it just doesn't feel like this is going to work as well or smoothly as I think it is. I mean, I understand you want to keep everyone safe, and it's probably the best way to do it is kind of have this sort of bubble idea. But I'm just not sure that it's going to be a wreck, man. It's going to be bad. I don't know how they enforce this stuff. I don't know how you expect guys to go 3 months without seeing anybody outside of the players on the team. You know, guys are going to want to eat out. They're going to want to leave. They're going to want to relax. And it just feels like this is not going to actually happen.
So I also think it's going to look ridiculous because it seems as if, for instance, July 15th, which is 2 weeks before the NBA season is supposed to return, NASCAR is going to have 30,000 fans present. I don't know what the total number of fans present is going to be in NFL and college football, but there are going to be some fans present there. I feel like the NBA is going to look ridiculous when it's September and college and NFL events are occurring with fans, and they're still playing in a bubble, and they're all going to totally rebel against this idea.
Right, but you can add fans back in, right? I mean, like, you could start with no fans and then eventually add them back in, and maybe it gets to a point where you go, you know, you have NBA finals in the arena in Orlando where the Magic play. I mean, like, I think they can make it to where you can open things up more as, you know, as regulations change. But the NBA players, out of all the players of any league, seem to be most concerned about the health and welfare of themselves. I mean, there's baseball players that have talked about it, but it seems like baseball players are now just like, all right, well, just tell us when we're playing.
Yeah.
You know, NBA players have seemed most concerned about their health. I mean, don't get me started with Kyrie and the stuff he's been talking about. It just seems like they're more concerned about that than any other sports. Look, I'll tell you, NFL players, there might be some that are like, you know what, I don't know about this, but I'd say that 99% of NFL players just want to play. I mean, Richard Sherman came out, was quoted by, you know, Josina Anderson. He's like, look, we get it, man. Like, we understand the risks that are there, but we got to kind of continue with life, and, you know, we're willing to kind of accept, you know, the risk of playing. And it's just really like the NBA players just have not been on board with the idea of getting back to work as quickly as other leagues have.
How much of this has to do, you mentioned Major League Baseball and the NFL, but as a former pro athlete, I feel like there is now in pro athletics not much recognition that fans are who pay salaries, and that athletes have gotten so used to salaries continuing to go up that they don't really understand that if they make the wrong decision, and baseball's a great example here, that fans can abandon a sport pretty quickly if they're making poor decisions. And if fans abandon a sport, eventually that means players make less, right? I mean, the reason why the WNBA players make a lot less than the Major League Baseball players is because way more people like Major League Baseball. But there's nothing to guarantee that 20 years from now, Major League Baseball players are going to continue to make more money. I feel like athletes have gotten so used to it because, for instance, I'm 41 years old, and the amount of difference in money that athletes make now compared to when I was first becoming a sports fan at 6 and 7 and 8 years old is seismically different. But that's because the business has grown and fans have been able to be monetized more. That can change, right? Is there a recognition of that? Like, do you think players believe they could actually end up making less money?
Not in the long term. I mean, possibly in the short term. But you look at, I'll give you two examples of where revenue went down and it went back up. And we can just keep seeing it go back. Right, look, the strike in baseball in 94. Strike happened, they returned to baseball, and 3 years later we have the 1998 season, and baseball revenues continue to go up. Even the last couple of years, as baseball has seemed to be less popular, the revenues and profits have been soaring in baseball because of the TV deals. And there's a lot of actual local interest, though, for baseball. If you look at, like, the RSN numbers, they're really good for baseball.
Yeah,
you
know, local
Cardinals
baseball
fans
teams
love the Cardinals. Yeah.
Local baseball teams crush local basketball teams in ratings. Like, cause the NBA gets more national discussion than the Major League Baseball does. But if you look at individual markets, I think it's like 24 out of the 30 or 25 out of the 30. Major League Baseball crushes the NBA in terms of how many people watch an average game in the local market.
Exactly. And then look at the NFL. Look, 2016, right? Colin Kaepernick takes a knee. Ratings go down in 16 and 17. And they just go right back up in 18 and 19. And the profits continue to rise. And I think there is a disconnect. And, you know, for me, okay, like, I'm an NFL player. The way we generate our money is different than baseball and different than basketball. You know, the NFL generates most of its money from TV revenue. And you can argue that, yes, fans are the ones watching the games being played. And, you know, therefore we kind of get the money because they're watching and it goes to TV and ad revenue. And then it eventually makes its way over to us in the CBA and whatnot. So, you know, we're multiple stages removed from the actual fan. The NFL, they said they'd lose $3 billion if no fans showed up, but, you know, they're still going to make $18 billion, you know, if there are no fans, right? It's such a TV-generated product, revenue stream, I should say, that I do think the NFL, there is a disconnect because of that reason. You know, baseball, obviously, is very fan-driven. You have 81 home games, right? You people showing up to your games is a big part of your revenue. But I do think, though, that right now, you know, if you're a player, you do have to kind of fight a little bit for what you think is fair in this discussion. Look, baseball players said, like, let's play. Like, just tell us when to show up and we'll show up. And I think Trevor Bauer laid it out best. It's very clear that Manfred wants this kind of 50-60 game season. Really not him, but the owners. And that's what they're going to get. I mean, I think they're going to get a 50-game season. And they'll play the players, you know, their prorated salaries for 50 games. But I think this is more on the owners, in my opinion, less of the players.
Look, I am furious at Major League Baseball that they're not playing in June and July. Like, they should be playing 100%, correct, I believe, by right now. As soon as it opened up spring training sites in Arizona and in Florida, they should have been there on May 15. They should have been getting ready. They should be back playing the season now. Having said that, a 50-game Major League Baseball season is actually, whenever they were to start, if they played around that many games, would actually be really interesting for one season, because usually we're playing 162, and we're going to talk with John Morosi about this in the next hour. But you kind of roll your eyes because you're like, oh, you know, each of these games doesn't really matter that much. When you only play 50 baseball games, like, there's craziness that can happen, right? I mean, a team that's not very good at all could easily win a division, because if you take any sort of 50-game scenarios, wacky things can happen, right?
Yeah, weren't the Nationals like 13-37 after 50 games last season?
Yeah.
So that definitely would change the way you look at things. I mean, you know, I'm a Giants fan. We're terrible, but let's say we get off to a hot start in a 50-game season and we win the West. I mean, that'd be incredible. I mean, it can happen, obviously, right? You start fast and you kind of, you know, you go 30-20 and you win the division by half a game, or by game, I should say. You can't really win by half a game, by a game. It would be incredible, but I just think that just feels sort of, I'm a baseball fan, and it just feels like, yeah, it'd be a waste. I don't know. I think that I get why they're going to do it. It maybe generates interest, and it's a way for maybe a way for fans to kind of enjoy a sped up product. You know, people was complaining baseball's too long, but it just would feel weird. I mean, starting pitchers would just have, you know, nine starts. Not 10 start. It's an odd setup, I think.
There's no doubt that it's an odd setup, and everything about sports right now is odd. When you look at the NFL, is there any doubt? I mean, we're not really that long from when training camp would officially start, right? We're a little bit over a month out, maybe 6 weeks from when training camp starts. I asked you this question for a while ago. Once training camp starts, is it just basically a full-on ride? I mean, I think your Richard Sherman quote is an interesting one, because there's so much risk involved in an NFL game compared to most other athletic endeavors that I don't think there's any doubt that every NFL player is under more danger playing in an NFL game than they are from the coronavirus. Like, I mean that legitimately, because the risk to your body and your health is more substantial playing an NFL game than it is the virus. Do you think that your average NFL player is going to understand that?
I think NFL players by nature are, they're macho guys, right? We're very confident. We don't think that we can get hurt. We don't think that anything bad is going to happen to us. I mean, it's just who we are. I think that you can't play the game scared. You really can't be scared in life. I mean, at least while you're playing. I think now that, you know, I'm removed from the game now, and I was very hurt when I did play, but you feel invincible, right? I mean, you're 27 years old, you're in the NFL, your body's feeling good, you just played a season, like, you're in your prime. You don't think, like, hey, I can get coronavirus, or hey, I might pass this on to someone, or hey, I like this and that. You think to yourself, I'm fine, I'm healthy, there's no concern with that. I think that's the way a lot of NFL players think. Now, there are guys, obviously, that do understand there are risks for this, and if they have family members that are at risk, that they can give it to them. But I just think a lot of NFL players feel invincible to a lot of things in life, and I would imagine they feel invincible to coronavirus, even though we saw Zeke, you know, test positive. I don't know if he's symptomatic or not. I haven't seen any of that yet.
But I think they said he's asymptomatic.
Okay, so I just think that your players, you know, they see Zeke asymptomatic. Okay, well, I can get it too, and I'll be fine. So I think a lot of players generally just want to play. I think that's the difference between other leagues. Like, the way our salary structure set up, the way our attitude is about playing. I just want to play, man. And I think some of these physical distancing guidelines in the locker rooms don't feel very realistic, in my opinion. I don't know how they're going to pull them off. There's just not space to do it. But I think guys just want to play. I think they just want to get in the field. They want to get their paychecks. They want to do their jobs. It's a short-lived career, and they'll take the risk of getting sick over not playing and losing a year's salary.
Look, I think that's a big part for the NFL. The average career is 3 or 4 years. So if you're a guy out there and you're trying to make a living, a loss of a season to an NFL player is likely to be way more significant than a loss of a season to a Major League Baseball player, a hockey player, or a basketball player or a soccer player, right? I mean, the careers are just so much more compact. That's potentially 25% of somebody's career earnings.
Yeah, correct. This is why, you know, we don't have football players, you know, saying what like Dwight Howard was talking about, or Kyrie. You know, Dwight and Kyrie have been paid millions upon millions of dollars. Dwight Howard, I think, is one of the top 10 highest paid players of all time in NBA history. It's easier for him to say, you know, we'll sit out a year or we'll sit out till there's change. NFL players, besides maybe quarterbacks, J.J. Watt, you know, Aaron Donald, and even those, you know, Aaron Donald's in line for probably another two contracts eventually if his career goes the way it goes. You know, a lot of guys just, they don't have time to sit out, and they have to weigh the risk of playing right now versus not. And a lot of guys will say, look, I'll take it. You're right. Young players right now, I would guarantee you that every player on a rookie contract who's not, you know, doesn't have a pre-existing condition, doesn't have any autoimmune problem, doesn't have a family member, direct family member who has an issue that they can get really sick from COVID would say, hey, I'm playing. I can't afford to lose, you know, like you mentioned, a fourth of my earnings, my career earnings, because of coronavirus. And I think that the NFL will be able to they'll manipulate the cap moving forward to try to make sure everyone still kind of gets paid too, which I think is different than other sports that it might, you know, be a struggle to figure out how to kind of come up with some money. But there's a windfall because of less fans. They'll find a way to kind of massage it and make it work. They've done that in the past. I've always trusted the NFL would play. I feel like they're the one league that would figure out how to do this, especially with all the time they have to figure it out.
What do you think about Kyrie Irving saying that he wants the players to leave the NBA and start their own league?
I don't really understand that guy. I mean, yeah, it sounds great. And I guess technically speaking, if everyone left the NBA, they could start their own league without the owners. But I'm not pro owner. I'm not really pro player. I'm kind of in the middle. I feel like there's some issues where I side more with the owners and issues where I side more with the players. But there is some value to the ownership understanding TV deals and marketing and advertising and making sure that things are kind of done in a certain way. You might not agree with that as a player, but they have that background. They have that business side background. We don't as players. A lot of players don't have – like if I just joined a league run by players, I'd be so disorganized. Like it'd be an absolute wreck. I wouldn't trust any of these guys to make sure that we knew what we were doing. So, like, the idea – yeah, it sounds great in theory, but – there also is a business part to a sports league. And some players have figured it out. I wouldn't trust a lot of NFL players to lead the business side of a league that was run by only players.
Outstanding stuff as always, Jeff Schwartz. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Joined now by John Morosi. He's our Major League Baseball insider. John, I don't know what's going on here. I keep asking you the same question now for what feels like months. What in the world's going on? Do you still feel like we will have baseball this year?
Good morning, Clay. I do feel like we will have baseball this year. I am truly confident, although I will admit, my friend, there are times during the week and in the last couple weeks when my overriding emotion has been the shrug emoji.
Yes.
As if to say, I just don't know what's going on right now. And there have been moments like that, I think, in recent days. But I look at it, and there are reasons, there are areas to compromise. The gap between the sides, and I can't stress this enough, the gap between the sides in real dollars is considerably smaller than the gap will be when they stake out their initial positions in the subsequent rounds of actual bargaining once the current CBA expires. And so there has to be a way to make this agreement and to bridge this gap, because if they cannot do that, then the larger questions of the sport, I think, become even more concerning because of the simple fact that the gap is actually much narrower now than it will be in the future. So I am optimistic in part because of that reason, simply because I think both sides are wise enough to realize the need to have the understanding and the compromise reached out to simply get the game back on the field for this year and then the next couple of years to come as well.
So how many games can we play at this point? I mean, there's been a lot of dilling and dallying. I probably talked to some of the same people you do behind the scenes, and I've said this on the show before. What I use as a gauge is Lock It In, right? My gambling television show that I do on FS1. They told us, hey, be ready to go June 29th, with an idea being that Major League Baseball could be back that week around July 4th. Then a couple weeks ago, they said, yeah, June 29th, don't be ready. We're not going then. And then they said July 15 now is our new potential return date. I don't feel very good about July 15th either, because I think that's even optimistic now for Major League Baseball. What are you hearing about in terms of a return date and how many games are likely to be played if a deal gets worked out at this point?
Clay, to me, I think we're eventually looking somewhere in the range of 60 games. I think that is a number that is significant enough that it will represent at least a portion of a year where we'll see numbers that certainly now they could be skewed. If you have a batting average and someone hits .430,
right,
that's a possibility. But when you look at the calendar, and if you allow for another week or so to go over the details, we're darn near. Obviously, we're in the second half of June. And so if you think about just the mechanics of all this, if you're able to strike a deal and get the whole thing figured out by the end of June and the beginning part of July, then you probably still have to take a few weeks to have everybody report and then have spring training. And by then, it would take a lot of effort to get the season going much before the end part of July at this point in time. And so when you consider where we're at with that, there was a statement made by Dr. Fauci, in fact, yesterday to the LA Times about his advice to try to have the season entirely done by October. So if you're still able to have at least some postseason in October, you really have to hit a window if you're going to heed his advice and then also still get things started on time. So to me, Clay, it's probably around 60 games beginning in the later part of July, early part of August, and that's if things go pretty well in the next 10 days or so.
You said, I think, on the show that you felt like that there was an 8 out of 10 positivity in terms of a season coming back. If you had to put it on a scale of 1 to 10 that there will be baseball this year, what number would you put on it now?
I would bump that down a little bit just because of all the uncertainty, but I would still say a 7. Yeah. I'm still more than 50% confident that we'll have a year. I really do, Clay. And I think it comes just from both sides realizing the gravity of the circumstance here and the fact that when you really look at it, they are not that far apart. And I also make this point that we are – obviously, our world has changed and turned upside down since the beginning of March, and I understand that. But I want both sides here to take a step back and look at what happened in the winter. We have completely forgotten the amount of money that was signed in the contracts that were given out during the wintertime to Gerrit Cole, to Steven Strasburg, to Anthony Rendon. You had teams like the Reds and the White Sox and the Blue Jays spending heavily on free agents like Nicholas Castellanos and Yasmani Grandal and Dallas Keuchel and Hyunjin Ryu. And it's as if we have forgotten about that for understandable reasons, but the industry from a health standpoint and the players were actually quite happy with the way that the offseason went, and that has been lost to history. And we have got to find a way to remind everybody about that on both sides and say, listen, you guys were in pretty good shape 6 months ago in terms of the economics of the game. Don't totally scramble up the economics of baseball when 6 months ago you had a pretty good situation on your hands. And to me, there is reason to hope that in the medium term at least, you've got a chance to get back there.
All right, let me give you an example. I want to see if you buy into it. So I'm a Southerner, so I can say this. Big SEC football fan. I know you're a Big Ten guy.
Sure.
If you're in the state of Mississippi, people in the state of Mississippi think there's a big difference between whether you're an Ole Miss fan and whether you're a Mississippi State fan, right? When you are in that state, it's a big difference, right? That they see each other as being very different. When you are outside of the state of Mississippi, and I'm not trying to pick on Mississippi. I like it. It's a fun state. People are like, oh, everybody from Mississippi is just a bunch of dumb rednecks, right? Like, that's what they would say about Mississippi. And I'm from Tennessee, and that's what people would say about us as a nation. But when you are inside of the state, there's a big difference between those different groups, right? Like, Ole Miss fans are like, we're the elite, you know, like they're the cow college, right? And everybody else would be like, oh, everybody in Mississippi's a cow college, right? That's what I'm trying to kind of put into context. And you could say the same thing about like Texas and Texas A&M, right? Like, the way they look at each other in state is different. I'm using that as an example here. The way Major League Baseball players and owners are looking at each other, they are really kind of getting into the fine tooth details. They're defining each other differently. They may think, oh, we're winning this debate. Oh, we're a lot different than they are. Oh, our side is better. When you pull back and look at it from a national perspective, everybody is just like, the entire baseball industry is filled with idiots. Most people aren't saying, oh, the players have made a better argument. The owners have made a better argument. Everybody is looking bad right now. And I think sometimes when you get involved in the nitty-gritty of a negotiation, you get convinced yourself that your side is winning when in reality, everybody is losing. Does that make sense to you? Like, if you're a hardcore baseball guy and, so to speak, you're focusing on the inside baseball, I think you're missing the larger picture, which is how angry the overall fan base is at the fact that you can't get a deal worked out.
I think, Clay, that you are hitting on a really key thing here, which is for a lot of Americans, they say a couple things. Number one, I want to have American team sports back on my TV as soon as possible, and I'll be grateful when we've got it. But to baseball, and to baseball's point, some Americans say, listen, I'll watch baseball, I'll give baseball another chance, but when the fall rolls around, or even when August rolls around, I've got other stuff going on. I've got the NBA playoffs now, the NHL playoffs, if you like hockey. You've got preseason football coming up at that point in time. Your schedule is about to get more crowded, setting aside the fact that a lot of Americans are dealing with job loss and family concerns and when are my kids going back to school. We've got a lot as a country on our minds right now. And I think that baseball would do well, and we agree on this, they would do well to get back as soon as they can, because history is going to remember well the sports that come back soon. And the sports that don't come back until it's a crowded month of August, when you've got the NBA playoffs and you've got football already ramping up again, it's going to be lost to some extent. And that's a huge missed opportunity. And to your point, Clay, it's difficult to be able to explain to the two sides that are so immersed in the granular details of what is fair and what is not based on one paragraph in an agreement that was reached in March about the ability to go back and renegotiate the salary structure. A lot of fans don't care about that. They want the games back on TV, and if you're not on TV soon or reasonably soon, they'll move on. And I think baseball has to find ways to internally reckon with that and realize that it's not just a small I would never say that the difference of money right now is small in real dollars, because it's huge money to anybody from a reasonable conception of it. But you have to realize the value by an exponential measure in coming back now and doing it the right way versus coming back when you're going to be obscured by other stuff in American life and in American sports in August, when your potential for future growth is going to be stifled.
We're talking to John Morosi. Do you buy into the idea that some Major League Baseball owners don't want to have a season at all?
I, the way I'd phrase it is, I believe in the reporting of Ken Rosenthal that a segment of owners, and it could be as many as eight, as Ken has reported, under the current circumstances, believe that they would be better off not playing. And that, and I think it's, I certainly think all 30 want to play in some way, shape, or form. It's just a question of, do they want to play under the current circumstances? And Ken has reported that it's a pretty significant number, such as eight, which, by the way, is enough to block the overall vote of ownership to move forward, because it requires 23 votes. It requires three-quarter support. So 23, if there's eight no's and 22 yeses, it's not going to be enough to move forward. And that's where I do think Commissioner Rob Manfred has been under a lot of scrutiny from a public standpoint about the changing statements of last week, what he said about 100% likelihood of playing, to now this week not being 100% confident. I think that what has changed is the willingness of his constituency to move forward on a certain plan, and the risk of what's been said by on the player side of a grievance. That is what's changed. I can promise you the opinion of Commissioner Rob Manfred has not materially changed in the last week, but it's almost like to use the political analogy, he's got to be able to deliver the votes. And if his conference, so to speak, has changed in its opinion, then that ability has changed, and he's trying the best that he can to stitch together 23 votes to support a plan that is also amenable to the players, and that is a very difficult task.
Having said that, and we understand the commissioner doesn't have sort of authority to bind the owners without the owners agreeing to be bound, it is a misstep on his part to one week say 100% we're going to have baseball, and then the next week say I'm not confident in that anymore. Because I think for a lot of people out there listening, when you say 100%, that means that you're certain, right? I'm 100% certain that that I'm going to be doing the show tomorrow if I am alive, right? I believe that, my radio show. If I then say, well, maybe not, like you can't give 100% certainty and then walk it back without looking like your ability to be trusted is severely impinged.
Well, I think it is certainly a difficult situation to have to walk back a statement of that magnitude on draft night, and it's either because the one of the two statements was for negotiating purposes, or because materially the opinion of his conference changed. But I get your statement that it really, from a credibility standpoint, is damaging to the game. It is, and the ability to be able to negotiate from that position where everybody's going to take faith in what you're saying. It's a very, very it's a very tricky spot that he's in. And I think part of the reason, Clay, is because of how public the negotiations have become. And it didn't have to be this way. And it wouldn't be this way if there was greater trust between the two sides. And this is the other key point here, that if this was only about safety protocols for the next month, if this was only about a renegotiation of what amounts to a relatively small percentage of industry revenues in a normal year, that would be able to be bridged. But what we have here is the compounding effect of years of mistrust mutually between the players and MLB about the way that free agency was operating, the way the teams have been rebuilding dramatically, and therefore their payrolls have been stagnant or in some cases moving down in recent years. And then in that atmosphere, it's hard to develop trust. And we never had a chance to see the positive effects in terms of actual earnings and revenue of what was done this past winter in spending, because the world changed in March. And I think that we're seeing now what's been left behind is mistrust. And when you have a negotiation of this sensitivity and this emotional level in an atmosphere of mistrust, you get statements back and forth, and now it's difficult to put the toothpaste back in the tube from the standpoint of having a reasonably productive conversation. And you and I have both seen it in sports that have worked well in the last couple of months. The NHL, NBA come to mind. Adam Silver, in about the first paragraph of what he had to say, he credits Chris Paul. Same thing with the NHL, Gary Bettman to Connor McDavid and Mark Scheifele and a lot of stars in the NHL. It's a working relationship, a partnership based on trust. We need trust to get through this time as a country, as a sports world, and right now, trust is what baseball does not have.
We're talking to John Morosi. How much worse would this be in your mind than the 1994 season when baseball didn't finish?
It would be worse. By magnitude, hard to determine, but it would be worse. It would be worse because we are at a time in our country, Clay, and I think you know this, where we are reassessing on a family basis, community basis, country basis, what is going to matter to us. What we've all had a lot of time to think and order our priorities and things that we believe in and want to spend our time and money on in the last few months. And if you're not part of that conversation, if you're not even going to take an at bat, so to speak, by not having your sport on TV and in the American public eye, you risk a multiplying effect for generations. You'll very soon have the NBA playoffs on TV, and you'll have families around the TV set watching different players and different teams, getting to know them, and that's a very powerful thing. And if you're not having that experience as a baseball community, it's going to be damaging in the long term. I think I made the point before that I was at a conference once where one of the speakers got up and said, "Hey, in the 1950s, the three most popular sports in our country were horse racing, boxing, and baseball." Not the case anymore in the case of horse racing and boxing. And certainly they have fan bases, but they're not on the front page of the sports section every day in the way that football and basketball are. So if you're going to have a reallocation of priorities, it really is going to be damaging to baseball to not be part of that conversation, if in fact that happens again. I don't believe it's going to happen, but if it does happen, to your point, Clay, I think it becomes more damaging even than 94.
Last question for you. I think there are a lot of people who have just feel like they're in the fog of misinformation and disinformation surrounding this entire story. What is worth paying attention to at this point as a significant factor if you're trying to look for the signal amid the noise, so to speak, to be able to actually pick up on what's going on here?
Well, the key thing here, Clay, is that the commissioner has not canceled the season. And it's a very different thing to go from either saying you have no plans for another proposal to actually materially canceling the season and or shutting everything down. And that's not what's happened here. There has been no statement about canceling the season. The players, I still think, want to play. And the other part about, from what they've said, they have said materially, hey, show us the time and date where we're supposed to go. Like, they clearly want to play, because guess what, Clay? If they don't play, what does free agency look like for all those players this wintertime? What does that look like? If your owners have no revenue, how much are they going to spend on you in a situation where you don't have a salary cap or floor? And so they want to play. The owners also want to play. The television networks also want to play. So there's a deal to be made, but it's going to require something that's really important, Clay, and that something is humility. I will be eager to see which side, and hopefully both sides, show the requisite amount of humility, shake hands, get a deal done, and I think then you have a chance to prosper together in the future.
Outstanding, as always, John Morosi. Go follow him on Twitter, at JonMorosi. I hope that by next week we have some actual movement here. But if not, we'll talk to you again next week, and I'll ask you what you think the chances are.
I've enjoyed our conversations, and I look forward to having better news to share, my friend, in due time.